Coming to you from the kitchen slash podcast studio on the south coast of England in Brighton, this is the £200,000 to £100,000 Challenge Podcast, your go-to hub for no-nonsense content and absolutely no false promises of passive incomes or getting rich quick. So settle in and join your host, Des Hamilton, to find out exactly how to say goodbye to being poor and hello to being rich. Sponsored by Stellaamp. Sourcing analysis simplified.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the £200,000 to £100,000 Challenge Podcast with me, your host, your guy in the chair, the guy that got plucked off the streets with £200 in his back pocket and someone said, go on, son, go and see what you can do. That's not what happened. This was very much my choice. I didn't get plucked from anywhere. But I'm your guy, Des Hamilton. Lovely to have you back. Thank you once again to our sponsors, Stellaamp SaaS, the best bit of sourcing analysis kit in the market. Let's get into this week's episode. This week, we roll out what will be the first three-parter, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the magnum opus, and we welcome Robin Waite into the podcast world with me. I would like to say thank you, especially to Robin. Robin took the initiative and said, let's do it in person. And without him, I wouldn't have done that. So I'm really grateful to Robin for making me pull my finger out of my backside. So what we did, we rolled the red carpet out. I booked a podcast studio in Brighton. Robin travelled down that morning. I ended up with a parking ticket off the back of it, but it was all worth it, right? Because what we ended up doing was basically having a two-hour conversation where I interviewed him for this show and he interviewed me for his show. But what we did do is that we pretty much merged it. So in this chat over the next 3 weeks, I open up a hell of a lot about myself, my driving motivations, the way I want to conduct my business, my plans for the future. And at the same time, we get to know exactly who Robin is. Robin is a business coach, a mentor, and an author. Robin implements a fearless attitude when it comes to entrepreneurialism, and it rings through with everything that he says and his own journey, his own ethos, and his own methods of processing his business are fascinating. We could have rambled on for about 10 hours, but like I said, I had a ticket on the car and we were getting kicked out of the studio fairly soon. Before we get to that, I am conscious that it's the second of the month, which means 2 days ago, it was results time, monthly results time. For me, we're talking, what, month 19? Out of 24, there's just 5 months to go. I've hit about £77,000 on my £100,000 challenge. If I hit my 30% goal at any point from now on, we hit £100,000. We are so close. And I'm still roughly 4 to 5 months ahead of schedule. So we are rolling. We're enjoying it. The journey is brilliant. I'm meeting all of these fantastic people. The community that we're building is just unbelievable. And if I stop and think about it, I will get overwhelmed with gratitude, truly. In the last couple of weeks, I've grown, to 14,000, 15,000 now on Instagram. And it just seems to be that everybody is building up to something because we all know that it doesn't matter who is in charge. Nobody is coming to help us and it is on us to change our life. With that in mind, in our Facebook group, which I thoroughly recommend if you haven't done already, in our Facebook group, the members like to share their monthly results, and I ask them to because I share my monthly results and it's nice to keep everybody accountable. We have had a bunch of results across the spectrum, ranging from people like Dan, who made his first £10,000 in sales since getting started, 6 months ago? And then we've got Dean, who was on the podcast a little while ago. He had a bad month, but he accepts that he wasn't consistent this month and he's taking stock out that wasn't performing very well. Understandable. We also had James who came on. James has had his first month, and again, it isn't necessarily what he expected to do when he came into this, but he understands the opportunity that's out there. He's got his eyes wide open. He's resilient to the challenges and he's going to tweak his processes. And I have no doubt that James is going to come back better. Me personally, we had a slower month in terms of Amazon sales. We are putting our stock out, quite frankly. We're letting it sell. And we're not necessarily replenishing at the level we were replenishing at because we are pulling our money into other models. We are going heavily into bundles. We want to start the work now before we get to Q4. We are also investing into private label. I'm close to launching what will be my first two products in private label, as well as all of the other stuff. Now, I'm conscious I don't really talk about my affiliate marketing, so I won't do that now because otherwise this will roll on for about an hour. But I will put a pin in this so I can talk to you more about what I'm doing with affiliate marketing. I can talk to you about the methods I've implemented to build the following. Because with everything else, take Amazon away and the print-on-demand stuff, which I haven't made a penny on yet, take that away. Everything else is dependent on you building a community. Affiliate marketing, you need one of those. Brand deals, you need one of those. YouTube, you know, everything else is dependent on it. So what we'll do is we'll talk about that and we'll try bringing in more people as well that can help us talk about building followings for that purpose. Right, let's get into the chat with Robin. I'm hoping you'll see me in the same light now as you do at the end of this interview. But I'll catch you on the other side. Do me a favor, roll them. Robin, how lovely to have you here in our first face-to-face podcast interview. Really glad.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Look, when we organised it, my wife thought I was a bit nutty driving down to Brighton because I live in the Cotswolds, obviously. It's a good sort of three and a half hour drive, yeah. M25 permitting. But I was like, no, what a great opportunity. And I think we were saying before we actually hit record, being able to eyeball somebody sort of in the same room makes such a massive difference as well to the vibe of a podcast.
So. Absolutely right. Either that or you're going to realise I've been a fraud all of this time and I've been making everything up.
I wouldn't think that at all, actually. Quite the opposite, in fact. So, no, it's all good.
I'm glad. Right. Let's talk about you, first of all. Talk us through your journey, because you have had a remarkable journey as well.
Yeah, well, so I actually started off with a bit of a side hustle many years ago. So my first proper business, registered limited company, was in 2004. So doing branding, web design and things like that, which I did for 12 years. And I won't bore everybody with the full story of that. And we might dip into bits of it. But actually, I think what people might find more interesting is what happened just before that. So I had a job at the same time as doing a degree. So I got a Bachelor of Science in Business Management. Funny story, actually, about that. There was 250 people on my course. 249 of them chose a Bachelor of Arts. I was the one person to choose a Bachelor of Science in Business Management. I got to go and collect my scroll when we graduated on my own. And all the rest of them had to file up on to go and get their BAs. But no, I did it. I was a systems analyst as the job, you know, and I was on student wages. And towards the end of that gig, I was there for probably about 4 years, and I'd helped the business sort of double in revenue. We'd cut the workforce as well, so the business was much more profitable. And I went to the owner of the business and said, please sir, could I have a bit more money? I was only on like 15k at the time, which was good for student money, but not for the responsibility which I was sort of having at the business. And he said no. So as you do, you go off and you think, well, I'm going to make some money somewhere else. I don't care whether it's cleaning cars or mowing lawns or whatever it might be, but and what I'm earning just isn't really enough. I want more. I just stumbled across, I bought a laptop, and this is back in the day when tablets really weren't a thing. You think 20 years ago, right? But this particular laptop, you could lift the screen up, twizzle it around, fold it back down, and it'd become a tablet. And I bought one for myself because I thought they were really cool, and I got it at a steal. And then I popped onto eBay and noticed that other people were selling these things, and not for small amounts of money either. So I thought, I'll have a go at that. And I got my Egg credit card, and I bought another three from the same company. And they were what we call grade two listed. So they were Fujitsu laptops, and it was all modular. So you could, say the DVD drive broke, you could pop it out, pop a new one in there, and it was as good as new. But I was buying them in for about £500 each. So a lot of money for me as a student, not earning that much, but Egg covered it, so I was all fine.
Well, those days, there wasn't a financial crisis, was there?
Well, no, exactly. You know, there's other things going on economically, but I was oblivious to those as a naive 21-year-old.
Yeah.
And just by chance, a friend of mine worked on a building site, and I said, oh, he's like, what are you doing? I said, oh, I've got this job, but it's not working out. I buying these laptops. And he was like, oh, we're looking for some of those for our construction site, because they're really robust. You put them in these, like, you know, rubber cases, and you could drop them off a 9-story building and they're great, but we can't get hold of them. Where are you getting from? I was like, ah, well, you can buy them from me. Buying them in at about £500 each, selling them on for 4 or 5K. It was a golden period of lasted about 4 months before obviously a shipping container arrived from wherever, Fujitsu, Japan, you know, and the price plummeted. But I sold about 40 or 50 of these over the 4 months and just made more money than, you know, 21 you could ever imagine making. And just the joy that it brought as well. And I was coming out, driving all over the country, Reading, Swindon, Southeast, up in the North, delivering these things. And then all of a sudden, the market dropped out of it. And I had to make a choice, like, what do I do next? And I did what any sensible 21-year-old does. I bought a car and booked a couple of holidays for me and my girlfriend at the time in Florida, which, funny enough, I've just come back from. And while I was out in Florida, one of the guys who had been made redundant through the work I'd done at the previous company got back in touch with me, so that, you know, we were still good mates, despite the fact I was responsible for him losing his job because I built this system that replaced him effectively. And he said, oh, Rob, I hear you're doing this tech thing, selling computers. You know, I'm building websites. Do you want to join forces? So that was February 2004. And we set up that first, you know, my first legitimate business, limited company. And the rest is history, really. I don't know how much detail you want me to go into beyond that, but things shifted in 2016. And I was between daughters. So the agency went really well. We had consistent sort of year-on-year growth with it. Grew it, you know, to about 250K revenue. And then, I don't know, one day I just woke up, you know, about 3 weeks before my second daughter, Sophie, was about to arrive, and just miserable, just unhappy, had enough. You know, I think the business, it just lost the edge of it, you know. And I'm a keen cyclist, and I went down, there's a local categorized climb. I remember going down it, the fastest I've ever been down it, 52 and a half miles an hour on a push bike down this hill, right? And I broke down, started crying at the bottom of the hill. And my mates are like, Jesus, you're all right, you're going to be okay. And I was like, just go back to the cafe, I'll meet you there for a cake and coffee later. Ended up next to a, not for any nefarious reasons, but next to a railway line. It was on the route home. There's a shady tree. It looked like a nice place to stop, right? I had no intentions really of going there to do anything nefarious, but something happened. Train went flashing past. And I just had this picture in my mind of what if I had stepped in front of it or not.
Okay, yeah.
Well, unconsciously, I've made this choice now. Well, I'm not going to do that. I really want to meet my daughter who's arriving in 3 weeks. Had two planned cesareans, so we knew when she was coming.
Yeah.
And I made a decision. I went home and I said to Charlotte, my wife, I said, darling, I've made a decision. There's some good news and some bad news. And, you know, the bad news is I'm closing my agency. And of course, international sign of distress. Everyone's pregnant, you know, all this, you know, properly, you know, understandably so. And then I was like, you know, this is really good for me. I'm going to do something different. I'll sell the agency. We'll get some money back in hand. And I'll make a plan after that. It'll work out. And, you know, I'm available for, you know, paternity leave whilst, you know, during that time as well. And thankfully, I found a buyer. Didn't sell it for much. It was a modest amount, but it was enough just to regroup. And
you didn't know what you were going to do at that time?
No idea, really. I'd started doing, and I know I'm a coach now, and I'm probably slightly biased towards mentors and coaching. You have a mentoring program as well, and you can clearly see the value in it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had a life coach, and I really believe in coaching. Like, I think when you're stuck, having somebody, a confidant that you can speak to, without a shadow of a doubt, it's the best money in my life that I've ever spent. And I was chatting to my life coach, and he said, oh, Rob, you're doing a bit more consulting work now, which you graduate through business to a point whereby, been there, done it. Then somebody says, that looks fun. Could you teach me how to do it? So you start then, you know, consulting and doing more, telling people what to do as opposed to doing the work.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, you'd make a really good business coach. And I was like, what? Because we all know what the coaching industry's like.
It's toxic.
It's toxic, you know, really toxic. I'd say about a fifth of the coaches out there are genuinely, hand on heart, brilliant people, great coaches, fantastic business acumen. They're great. The other 80%, 4 out of 5 coaches out there are just out there just to line their own pockets and make loads of money.
Yeah.
And they don't care how they do it. They're very, you know, it's a toxic industry. And I knew what I was kind of stepping into. And slowly just started, I got a couple of people who said, oh, you sold your agency. Could you help us do it? Okay, buy me a coffee and we'll have a chat and we'll see where we go. So I kind of did it a bit informally. Eventually it got to a point a year or two in where it's like, I need some structure to this and I need a name for it and a brand. And I need, you know, to start, well, how coaches show up in the world, the good ones.
Yeah.
What are they doing? They're on podcasts and they're doing, you know, speaking engagements and things like that. So I had to go from this very introverted web designer systems analyst to then come out. I mean, I couldn't have seen myself doing something like this 8 years ago.
Right.
It wouldn't have happened because I was just shy, retiring, much happier not seeing anybody for a week, you know, if I could get away with
it. Yeah, yeah. Systems kind of lends itself to that sort of personality though, doesn't it?
Yeah, very much so. It's just programming basically. You're just sat there coding all day long and you just, you know, and the satisfaction comes out of when you hit compile and run and it works. And I'm like, oh, it did a thing. And that, you know, coaching, on the other hand, it very much relies on you speaking to people, having the ability to be able to articulate your knowledge and transfer that knowledge to somebody else.
Yeah, I bet. That's fascinating. Just to go back over that, there are so many similarities. It's just proper sliding doors moments, you know, where you've gone left and I've gone right. Back in 2004, exactly the same thing. I graduated in 2002, and I was working for American Express at the time because I'm from Brighton. Everyone works for American Express. If you're from Brighton, that's the rule. And the graduate scheme there wasn't very good. And I applied. I was successful when they said, there it goes, and it'll be £15,000 a year. And I said, exactly the same as you. I went, well, no, that's terrible. I've just graduated. My brother at the time was working for Virgin Atlantic, and he said there's cabin crew jobs going. I went, well, if I'm going to work for little money, I might as well do it and travel the world. So I went traveling. Virgin Atlantic, fanciest traveling you could do with a bunch of pretty people. It was a terrible couple of years.
Oh, it sounds awful. I'll just get my little violin out for you. Yeah.
But then, I came back and joined the police, because by that point I was into shift work and just knew I wanted to work shift work. And I was in America when the first iPod got released, and they weren't being sold in over here. And I did exactly the same thing as you. I was going to Miami, and there was a Costco out there, and I could buy an iPod out there, one of the old click wheel ones, come back. And rather than sell it, I thought, I'm going to have this, and I kept it for myself. If I had just gone down that path, I wonder what life would have looked like.
Yeah.
Because I had an egg card as well. Egg cards were awesome at the time. What happened to egg, by the way?
I know, it was great. The cashback on it was amazing.
Yeah, it was.
I remember the bubble burst, and I was, you know, couldn't sell these laptops and make a decent profit on him anymore. And then Egg, bless them, about 3 months later, cut me a check for about £1,500 on cashback. I was like, it's brilliant.
Yeah, and it just, before you know it, I'm 40 when I had that awareness. I didn't have an epiphany like you did, but there is a point, and everyone that I speak to as part of this podcast, there is that point. There's something that happens. There's a switch, and you go, no, this isn't the life I'm meant to have. And the fact that you did it with your wife 8 months pregnant, good for you. Unbelievable. I'm so glad it's worked out for you as well, because I can imagine the fear and anxiety your wife must have had at that time.
Well, I think as well, like it's making the decision actually is almost a relief. I think on in many respects,
yeah.
It's the messy bit that comes before that, which is mostly riddled around fear, right? Because you're thinking about, like, if I make this decision, what's the potential upside? What are the downsides? And it's really quite hard. So I'd be curious, actually. So made those various sort of transitions, you know, about when to join the police, also when to leave the police, and then your current circumstances. I bet there was that. I'd love to hear about what was going on for you, that messy bit before you then finally made the decision.
Yeah.
What, you know, from a fear perspective, what was going on for you?
They're funny enough, and it goes back. I've been with a life coach now for a best part of a month, 2 months, because I've gone through this whole imposter syndrome thing. And we're talking about the various downs I've had in my life. The divorce from my first wife, for example, that was an awakening. Never forget it. I was in the garden of my own house, listening to music, and then some lyrics come over. Am I really who I used to be? Am I really who I was? It's a Ryan Adams song called Lucky Now. That was enough for me to go, nope, I'm not. And the police, you knew that the police was going a certain way. So I was the first police officer in Sussex to leave and join the company that I ended up working for. And I know I've got that in me, you know? So when I did start this journey, I knew that I could do it if I just implemented that part of my brain again. Because I'd done it before, and it was an emotional, personal thing that made me do it the first time. So I wonder, amazing how it all plays out, isn't it?
Yeah. There was some, I'm curious, because obviously, so for those who are listening to my track of this conversation, Des, how I came, stumbled across Des, doom scrolling TikTok at 11 o'clock at night, and this guy pops up in his grey cardigan and his glasses, and he starts talking about this amazing challenge which he's undertaking, which is to take £200 and turn it into 100K, and he's going to do it in 2 years. And I'll be frank, there's a lot of BS on all sorts of different socials. And what drew me to you was you approached it with like a very, do this, you had the spreadsheet, I'm going to add 30%, this is how I'm going to do it. It was very strategic. It was very tactical. It wasn't like airy-fairy like a lot of the 21-year-olds who go out and think they can buy something. You talk about this in your videos, like, you know, buy a few products in Tesco's and then sell them for millions of pounds.
Yeah,
it's really calculated, really well thought through. But I'm imagining, again, we go back a couple of steps before that. You're sat on the sofa with the wife, probably chatting to each other about, I don't know, I'm going to make some assumptions here. You're really unhappy. Kids, we're not really seeing them. They're quite unhappy as well. I don't know.
Yeah, classic stuff, yeah.
We need to change this. What are we going to do? I'd love to know how you went from sort of that, whatever that conversation was, into the, I got it, £200 to 100K.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into that. I love this. Yeah. So it was actually our honeymoon. We got married on New Year's Eve in 2021. We had one child at that point. So I had two from the previous marriage, so with three kids. And all we could afford for our honeymoon, combined with the time available to Claire, because she was a secondary school teacher, so she had to go on holiday during term times, we had a few days in January that we could go to Edinburgh. And we realised then that we'd been together 2.5, 3 years at that point, and we hadn't had a holiday. The film we got on a plane was Scotland. I love Scotland. I'm a Hamilton. I'm Scottish. But you want more than that. If you're getting on a plane, you want to go somewhere sunny, right? Instead, we went to the rainiest place in the world. So we sat in the airport coming back home. Right, what we've got isn't enough anymore. Financially and time. What can we do? And Claire said, well, I've been looking into surveys, the traditional side hustles, surveys, user testing, secret shopper stuff. And she went, if I eBay a few things, we can get a few hundred quid for the year. And I said, well, funny enough, I was given a discount code for, it was like an online course, Read, Read HR. Yeah. They sell courses. I had a £10 discount, so I could buy any course on there for £10. And I saw one on passive income. And I thought, well, if you're going to look at the internet, I'll look at the internet as well. And I stumbled across Amazon FBA for the first time. This course was terrible. It was worth £10. It was terrible. But it made me realize the internet is an avenue for making money. So I started researching. So this was in January. I didn't actually start my challenge until September. So I was researching for the best part of 6 months. And I did them all. I did a drop shipping thing. I did Kindle Direct Publishing, which is those where you can write or ghostwrite a book,
yep,
and Amazon publish it for you. Print on demand stuff. All of the little things that everyone researches. And I realized there was money, but most importantly, I realized that our generation weren't being spoken to in this space.
Yeah.
So I'm blind and I'm going down these funnels of so many ads on YouTube where I decide, yeah, I like the look of that. And before you know it, I'm being peppered with emails. And I thought, no, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to have to do it properly. I need to figure out what my brand is. I need to figure out what my values are. And if I am going in, I'm going in 2 feet deep end stuff. So I planned it, genuinely planned it. I sat down and went, right, okay, my branding is going to be family values. My branding is going to be hardworking, family man, ethical. That's a big one. And honest.
Yeah.
Because I'm fed up with the amount of BS that's on there. So in an incredible twist of fate, being honest is somehow a USP. It's insane. How is that a thing?
It goes hand in hand with that whole, like, how people show up on social media, though. And they think they're being authentic, but they're actually just, they're really not.
Yeah.
They're just show.
Yeah.
You get the highlight reel on social, right?
It's true.
There's a couple of really interesting things there to unpack, which I think might be useful for both of our sets of listeners, actually.
Yeah, sure.
Because inadvertently, you've gone through two steps in my process for starting up a business, uh-huh, right? And whether you realized it or not, and there must have been something good in the course, which you did. When they talk about niching, they focus very heavily on sort of the market niche, right? So, and that sort of level, it's very surface level, like demographics. My niche is going to be middle-aged men in their 40s who live in Gloucestershire, right? And it doesn't tell you a lot about the type of person you want to work with. You've actually inadvertently, how conscious you were about this, you went to the second and then the third layer deep around understanding who it is that you want to be and who you want to work with. The second layer is around something called psychographics. So it's just the psychology around, like, why people buy from other people, basically. But it's the behaviors. So once you've identified who your ideal target is, so if it's middle-aged men in their 40s in Gloucestershire, great. But where do they hang out? What gyms do they go to? What programs do they watch? What magazines do they read? Who do they subscribe to on socials? It's all their sort of general behaviors on a day-to-day basis. The third tier, which is what I find the most interesting, and a lot of marketing gurus and experts out there, they pat themselves on the back. They go, great, done demographics and psychographics. Look how amazing I am. Kneel down and bow to me. They forget the most integral part of marketing, right? And I call it the identity layer, because people buy from people. Mm-hmm. What you said there about values and alignment and how you want to show up and who you want to show up for, you will probably find that a lot of the people who come into your world, your universe, you'd be happy to go down the pub and have a pint with them because they're genuine, decent people, just like yourself, right? That's because for whatever reason, you meet them at that identity layer. So you've nailed all three layers of like market niche, probably without realizing it.
Wow, that's so amazing.
Good job there.
Thank you.
The second side of it is then the product side of it, because a lot of people are like, oh, I want to start a business, but I don't know what to do. So that they kind of, it's very like willy-nilly, or maybe they might go and ask their mates, oh, I want to start a business. What do you think I'm good at? So they do a bit of research and things like that. But there isn't a bit of an analytical side, a really simple process where just through a basic bit of analysis, you can write down a list of things and then figure out which of those ideas is most likely to work. I go through this with hundreds of business owners. And 99 times out of 100, this process works and we hit upon an idea and it absolutely flies. And it's very simple. So that list of ideas you came up with, whether it's FBA or filling out surveys or, you know, all of the different ideas you've got. Imagine you've got a spreadsheet with five columns in it. So left-hand column, you write a list of all of those ideas. And then the following three columns, you can put some criteria down that you're going to measure these ideas against. My three favorite ones are, how much do I love doing this? Because if you're doing it just for the money, at some point, it'll get hard.
Yeah.
And the money is like an extrinsic motivator. When that runs out, and if you don't have it backed up with an intrinsic one, an internal one, it's just going to stop dead.
That's
but
right.
If you love doing it enough, you'll work through those hard, sticky times and you'll come out the other side stronger. You know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
How much do I love doing this thing? What results can I get from my clients? So I know with what you're doing, if you know the FBA side of things, well, for sending a good quality product to a client, yeah, I can do a great job of that. I can get it to them on time. It's a good quality product. If something goes wrong, I'll back it up with quality customer service.
Yeah.
I can guarantee that's exactly what you do.
Yes.
So can we get great results for clients? And then the third one is, can they afford to pay? And like a lot of people shy away from the money conversation.
Yeah.
Because it's a very British thing, I think, especially to avoid talking about pounds and how much we earn and various things like that. But at the end of the day, like business, it isn't even about how many clients can I enroll. It's actually about making profit.
Mm.
That's the one goal in business, is to run a profitable, sustainable business. Undercutting people, we'll probably hopefully have the pricing conversation because I know I love it. I love talking about money and
pleasure. Yeah. I'm like pretty sure my course is low ticket and I'm pretty sure I'm missing a trick. But
it's not about whether it's expensive, high ticket, low ticket. It's about, is it profitable and sustainable? And, you know, you've got a good audience of, you know, if you've got a big enough audience, it's okay to introduce low ticket.
Yeah.
We'll go into that later. I'll close that loop later.
Okay.
Those three criteria, you grade them on a scale of 1 to 10 for each of them. And at the end of it, so if you're like 8 out of 10, yeah, I love doing this. 9 out of 10, I can get great results. 6 out of 10, I can, you know, make some money from this. Top them up, you know, all 23 out of 30. And if that one scores top, that's the idea we're going to run with. And it's that simple.
Right.
You can just do that in an evening.
Yeah.
In 20 minutes. And I think most people, they go through, oh, I'll start this business. Oh, it didn't work. I'll start this business. Didn't work. I'll start this business. Didn't work. Start this business. Didn't work. If you go through it analytically and then go, right, I'm going to give this business 90 days, you stand it in the best possible step, which is what you did. You're like, right, 200 to 100K. Here's my vehicle for doing it. We like it enough that we'll stick at it. Lo and behold, you're ahead of schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible. I think it's because inadvertently, it was a 2-year plan, and I thought, right, okay, well, I'm going to give myself monthly sprints. So the 30% every month, I had a monthly goal. And then sort of what I didn't really talk about on any of my socials was that I cut that in half. So at halfway through the month, am I on track for my 30%? And then at that point, do I care? Because at the moment, I'm getting nowhere near 30%. But 30% of where I'm at the moment would be about £18,000. And I'm not at that place yet where that's a consistent amount of money. So I'm making 8, which suits me down to the ground. So even though it's like 10%, I read a couple of books as I was researching, and I did research. And when I talk about researching, I don't think I can get over enough how much research a person should be doing if they're going to take this seriously.
Yeah.
But not to procrastinate, not to put it off, but to target your research. So I read books, and I'm the same as you. I don't read books, I listen to them. And whether I'm on the bike or whether I'm in the car, you can absorb so much more content, can't you? And you can do it at 1.5 speed and you can listen to as much as you want to listen to. One of them was Building a Story Brand.
Oh, Donald Miller, brilliant. Love that. Absolutely love that book.
That's the basis for every TikTok, Instagram post I do. The economy is the baddie. My audience are the heroes. I'm the storyteller.
Yeah.
And Amazon is my weapon of choice. That's every post is that built around. And the other one was, I think, can't remember what it was called, Rob. Can't remember. It was something like Plan on a Page, Business Plan on a Page.
Okay, yeah. Was that Derry, Llewellyn and Jones or something?
I think so. And they break down the simplicity, the values, the branding, the target audience, exactly that. And so I knew my target audience was going to be someone like me, but what does that mean? How are they with IT? If you're asking them to build an internet business, how au fait are they with using the internet?
Yeah.
And you'll range from everything like someone doesn't even know what a mouse is through to someone being able to build their own website. And what do they do with their time? What do their weekend look like? Well, they love their Saturday, but Sunday's good for half the day, but then they've got trepidation about the Monday. So let's start targeting when's best to get that message through to them. And you really, really put down at that forensic level. I'm amazed how well it worked. Now, looking in hindsight, of course it bloody worked, but I'm amazed at targeting down, because everyone, your natural assumption is, I want to talk to everyone. I don't want to niche down. I'm drilling it down to probably what would be 100 people, but it's nonsense. Because if you can slow that down and minimize it, so when you're talking into your phone, you're literally visualizing a handful of people on the other side of it. When it turns out it's going to people all over the world, and I've got 20-year-olds from the north that haven't got anything to do with my target audience buying from me now.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how it worked.
But there is, I detect, I know you're working with a life coach, so I don't want to get into coaching you, but necessarily, but I still detect the hint of imposter syndrome.
No, absolutely.
Like, your success is down to who you are, Des. There's people who are just not cut out for this, but you've taken that analytic approach and you've applied yourself and you have a formula for it and it's working. And I think you need to have a bit more faith in that, perhaps. Even down to, it's interesting, like the self-talk that we have sometimes around, there was something which you said about adding 30% would increase by 18K and I'm just not there yet. I like the fact that you added the word yet onto the end of that.
Yeah.
But why are you not? Why are you not ready for 18K month on month?
Yeah.
Profit, right? Like who set these rules up, right? Like, one of the things I come across really regularly, especially in the pricing space, is around people, I couldn't possibly put my prices up. I've already put them up this year. This is family friendly.
Dickhead's fine.
Right? Which dickhead made up the rule in business that you can only put your prices up once a year and by 5 to 10%, you know, it's a safe sort of place to play, right? We go through on our program, we go through iterations on pricings a dozen times a year. You can put your prices up once a month. You can do it daily if you want to.
Yeah.
Until you reach that happy point, supply and demand, et cetera, et cetera. I find it really fascinating, some of the rules we set for ourselves, right? Or that are given to us, or the preconceived ideas that people have about business and the way that they should work.
Yeah.
But I don't know what my point was here, but you're like proving to everybody because of who you are and you're changing people's lives. And one other point as well, so many people on social get hung up about, oh, I'm not getting views, I'm not getting likes, I'm not getting comments or whatever, I'm not getting clients from this, or, you know, not winning business from it. I wish I could remember who it was, but somebody recently said to me, imagine going to a networking meeting, right? And you walk into that room and there's only one person in there. Are you going to turn around and walk out? No, you're going to walk over, get your coffee, add your cream, and you're going to have a conversation with that person, aren't you?
Because
that's what human beings would do.
Yeah.
Why is it any different when we're on social media that, because, you know, we ain't got one like or one comment, that we don't lean in and go and say hi to that person, that one liker, that one commenter, that one customer?
Yeah.
And I think people are just proud. I don't know if that's the right word, too proud, that they need to somehow be bigger and liked by more people. And they're too proud to get involved with just one person or just to make £10 or £5 from someone.
Yeah, I think everyone just compares themselves to other people. And you're dead right. If you're doing a post and only 50 people watch it, I can guarantee you that those 50 people watched it from beginning to end and absorbed it. When you've got 100,000, they probably only watched a large percentage of that would have only watched it for 5 seconds. But when you've got a smaller amount, it's much more concentrated. Exactly like you said, when you walk into a room and there's only one person in there, you're going to give that person the best experience because it's a one-to-one deal. If you're going in and there's 1,000 people, you're generalizing. It has to be crude by its own nature, doesn't it? It's quite incredible. And I'm fully aware that I say this with a large number behind me. I don't delete anything if the numbers don't take off.
Yeah.
So the last one I did, which is about playing and having fun when you're sourcing and treating it like a treasure hunt, it's probably my lowest metric that I've had in about 3-4 weeks. But I'm really proud of that post. And I know that people that have listened to it and commented and engaged, it landed.
Yeah.
that's all that matters, isn't it?
That's it. There's one thing which you might have, I don't know if you noticed this or not. So I con a lot of your thing, TikTok especially. So I when I'm looking at sort of building partnerships with people, I like to hang out just with fun people, like-minded people, fun people. They're doing great things, exactly like yourself, right? You may have noticed I comment regularly on your videos. The reason, it's a very simple reason for that. So one is because that engagement, I know it helps you.
It does.
I enjoy it, so it's worthwhile. But when you look at the numbers, right? So let's take a video, which I've commented on. You get a lot of really good engagement on your videos, actually. So probably buck the trend a little bit. But let's take somebody like Ali Abdaal. He might get 10,000 or 20,000 views on a TikTok, right? Then you look at the number of people who like it, and there's normally about 100 to 200 people. So only 1% of people have bothered to, they might watch a video or scroll through it, but only 1% of people then like it. And then I've noticed that anywhere between 0 and 3 people, generally as a rule, comment on his videos within the first 48 hours, right? So you take that as a percentage, it's like 0.01%, right? So the mere fact, folks, don't just scroll through content. If you're supporting somebody, go and leave a comment, because that immediately puts you in the top 0.1% of people engaging on social media.
Yeah.
So it may not directly help you, but it will help the person that you're following for a start. And I'm a firm believer as well that, and people will be following you for a reason, right? Because they're learning from you and they want to advance their life in some way, shape or form, right? By setting up a business and, you know, hopefully eventually signing up to maybe one of your courses or something like that. But in commenting, that adds to that learning experience because you're now interacting, you're engaging, and it just shifts something in the mind so that when somebody watching, they comment, join a course, start up their first business. And now they're expecting people to engage because they've done that engagement. They'll understand how to get people to engage with their content as well.
Definitely.
There's like a whole process behind it, which psychological process behind it, which people just really massively underestimate.
Yes. Funny enough, I've got a post that's going out probably either tomorrow or the day after. By the time this podcast goes out, it would have been posted. It's the second part of my print on demand research bit. And I say exactly that. If you want to network, you must put yourself out there. Comment on a post. If you want to go and DM someone, even if they don't reply, just keep trying. Because when you post on someone's videos, yeah, it helps them. But on top of that, it also gives them ideas for further content and it builds them up. They will then be grateful to you. And that starts potentially that relationship going.
Yeah.
It's everything, isn't it? This podcast, for me, the best thing I've ever done. And I've earned very, very little from it. But what it's paid me in non-monetary value, well, is priceless.
Ended a bit abruptly, didn't it? I am sorry about that, but like I say, this is a 3-weeker. There is so much to unpack through this whole thing. These episodes could run an hour long, and you know that I'm trying to keep them under, I'll try to keep them under 35 minutes. This one's going to run about 45, I reckon. But let's unpack some of this, right? Let's talk about the fact that Robin put in the biggest leap of faith and backed himself when it mattered the most. He was 3 weeks away from having a baby. His wife must have been racked with anxiety. And as he quite rightly said, it's the stuff that comes before the decision, which is the hard bit. So if it got to a point where Robin was struggling on that bike ride, what must it have been like for the last few weeks internally for him before you get to that stage? And I know exactly how that would have gone. If I relate it to my own examples, I mean, everyone's different. Of course they are. But I understand the hardship that comes before the thing that makes you trigger into being a different version of yourself. Really, really, really inspiring stuff. How could you not love that? The other thing as well that we will draw out in later episodes, Robin went from being a computer programmer to a business coach. Motivate. I mean, you can tell in the way he puts himself about. How motivating is he? Now, he went from a self-confessed introvert to this character. And we talk about how that transition went in later weeks. But don't just necessarily think that because you're in your lane, whatever lane you decide to label yourself with, that it can then determine the rest of your life. Because change is always possible as long as you tell yourself a different story. Funnily enough, the other stuff that we talked about, if you are part of our mentoring program and you come along to our weekly calls on our VIP group, that will all sound very familiar to you. Because I talked about target audience, I talked about niching down, and we talked about brand values and showing up. When it comes to building your own social profiles, again, like we talked about, there is so much you can do when it comes to building your audience, but the biggest element starts with you. Do you know who you are for your audience? And then once you do that, start getting planning. That leads us beautifully to the tip of the week.
Tip of the week.
When it comes to planning, you need to have a plan in how you're going to plan. You do. You need to give yourself a timeline, because you could easily go down a rabbit hole that ends up in procrastination, because let's face it, you're going to be starting something new that is going to be so big and such a huge change to your life. The procrastination, the analysis paralysis. I hear so many crappy phrases in this entrepreneurial space, but I like that one. It's a thing. So you need to give yourself a timeline. I'm going to investigate. I'm going to research for 3 months. And I'm going to do it this way. And then get yourself on the internet and Google business plan. Read a book, How Do I Write a Business Plan? And then get to it, because how are you going to grow your business if you haven't got a plan? It's the same things that I often talk about. How are you going to get to your goals if you don't know how you're going to get there? How are you going to grow a business if you haven't planned how to grow your business? So plan it. I don't care whether you're talking to your phone for content. I don't care if you're selling on Amazon using the power of Amazon and big, massive brands. It doesn't matter. You still need to figure out your brand values, who you are, who your audience is, how you're going to show up. What is your plan for growth? What are your numbers? What are your metrics? What are your deadlines? Get that all in place so you have something to work towards. That all do.
Tip of the week.
Right, let's wrap it up there, because we have got a hell of a lot coming up down the road. We have got part two and part three of Robin for the next 2 weeks. In addition, we have got an awful lot going in the Facebook group at the moment. The community is getting stronger and stronger, and everybody is showing what can be achieved in real time with the right mindset in reality. I can't recommend joining this group enough. I also can't recommend following Robin enough. I'm going to put his links down there in the show notes. Robin Waite. Get following him for motivation, for business ideas, for pricing strategies, for fantastic business acumen. Get following Robin. In the meantime, I'm going to say roll in the music, will you please? Let's get ready for the voiceover. I hope you all have a lovely week. By the way, my newsletter is doing very well. Don't forget to join that if you want to join that. And tell your friends about all of this for me, will you? Have a lovely week. Take care, Tanner.
You've been listening to the 200 to 100,000 pounds challenge podcast. Be sure to join us next time for more real talk and undoubtedly terrible jokes as Des gets ever more closer to saying goodbye poor, hello rich. Sponsored by Stellaamp. Sourcing analysis simplified. Just a little reminder that this podcast cannot and does not constitute any form of financial advice. We know things are tough for a lot of people right now, so if you need assistance organizing your money, please seek the help of a qualified financial advisor.